it's I guess you know, the council felt it more than anyone else. Like when I go out to meetings, or when the council go out to meetings, they're the ones who felt, you know, the things that were being said in other communities about Moravian Town growing corn, ha 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 ha, you know, they think they're going to go someplace with it. And they were the ones who had to be faced with that. We have a strong council and strong believers in the project, and it didn't bother them. That's and then good. Now when they're coming back, and we're actually, a lot of the reserves who went, ha ha ha, are the ones who constantly writing to us saying, could we get some corn off you?
That's interesting.
You know, they're the ones that are responding, and there's no corn. Right now in this area, there's absolutely no corn available. And we're the only ones who have corn. The council isn't free to give it out, and it's not for the reason that they're trying to prevent people from having it, but they're preparing themselves, because over the years you've grown such a small amount, they're stockpiling so that can go into a sizable production in the future with it. So, but we have been giving out corn, mostly for public relations reasons, to communities and to Native organizations who are having any social event going on. We will donate the corn to them, but we will donate one of our products to them, like the hominy or the flour or whatever. We won't give them the raw, we'll donate the other stuff to them. Say, use it. But we've had actually a good response from a lot of our products.
That's wonderful. What's about the average age of the workers that you have on the project? Is it an age range, or are they tend to be younger people?
Okay, we've had, over these past few years, I think our average, we're ranging about late 20s to mid 30s. If you look at the statistics on this band, it's a very young community. I'd have to say right now, less than 7% of the people in this community, 7% or less, are over the age of 65. 44% are under the age of 19. And the community had lost a lot of people within a span of 10 years. A lot of elders had been wiped out, and it was just sort of, they peaked at a certain age and they all died, and it left a major hole in the community. And sort of from that hole, because those elders were the ones who kept the community activities going, who kept the councils going, who did a lot of that, and then there was this vacuum and there was nothing there. And we're just now reviving the young people to actually take on those roles, to run the activities, to sit on the committees, to be elected to council. So it's a young community starting up with all new people again. And it's actually coming very well, coming very strong now and in its element, and that's positive. We, our regular workers are in that age group. However, in the summer, we try as much as possible to bring the young people on under summer programs to learn a lot of the stuff that's happening in the project. We work with the kindergarten school. Actually, we just did a couple things the last few weeks with the kindergarten school on the corn. We do a lot of the stories. We show them how to plant. We get them in the gardens with us. We show them what we produce and how it's produced and why we produce it. So we're trying to get a lot of involvement from all levels.
From other reserves for you to essentially help them to set up a similar project? Is that kind, or has it been primarily for the products themselves?
It's been primarily for products themselves. We've had a couple of requests from Northern Communities Ontario to talk basically, to talk about our product, but their main interest is how we went and developed on an even keel of community and economic development.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they're interested in, and that's what they'd like to see. And we've had some discussion with another band who grow something altogether different. What they grow is shipped off to buyers, and it's sold I believe most of it's sold in Europe, but it's no longer, they have no ownership over it. They've talked to us about doing a joint venture with them on their products. They're growing, they bring it down here, we process it, and it'll have total Indian handling and total Indian label on the products. We've said that's a possibility we can look at in the future. So there's a lot of, there are things going on. A lot of the interest that's been generated right now, we've had more interest from the U.S. than from Canada in terms of what we've done with our products and what we're doing here in the community.
How do you account for the difference in U.S. versus Canadian response?
U.S. is more open, and very much the buzzword in the U.S. among Native communities is community-based economic development. And they had experienced 10 years ago, 5 years ago, the sort of things that Native communities are experiencing now. They've had Ford on their reservations. They've had industrial malls on their reservations. They've had a lot of those things happening on the reserves that time, and now all those lots are vacant because there's no more subsidy from the government. There's no more nothing. So they're back to square one, and they said, well, they've gone through that experience, and they said, basically, if anybody's going to develop this community, we're going to develop, and we're going to develop in what we want to develop. So they've started all over again, and they've gone into community-based economic development, and they've developed on things that they're familiar with. And so they're more open and more receptive and have a stronger understanding of what we're trying to do and what we've been doing with the corn products, and are more willing to talk about it and want to hear more about it.
Do you think that this kind of economic development, as I told you, that one council member, he seemed to divide economic development and traditional values and works as kind of separate things. Mm-hmm. Do you see this kind of economic development as being something that's more likely to preserve some of the traditional Native values?
I think so. Like, we're taking a very holistic approach to the development we're doing. We will not say economic without community development. They have to go hand in hand. And we feel that, why are we developing something that's foreign to us? When we were agricultural people, let's develop in agriculture, and let's develop in something we know about, and let's develop in something we have pride in, and that's a traditional food. We have, you know, we've got plans for the future in developing in some other foods that are common to us, some teas that are common to us, but those are way down the line until we get the corn going. But it all has sort of a path it's going to go in.
Was this your idea? Was this generated from you?
Yeah. Because the experiences I had at the university with the African and Latin American people, and because one of the things that I missed when I was away, because I had been away from this area for a while, and I was in the Northwest Territories, and one of the things I missed was corn, and I couldn't get it. And so I knew what it was like to be out and away from those things and wanting it, and then not being able to have it. And I felt there must have been a lot of people out there who are in the same boat, and yet they're not that, some of them aren't that far from a reserve, but they don't know where to get it, and a lot of them don't know how to use it next.
Well, it's interesting that in our interviews, one of the most common complaints of the Native women has been availability of materials, whether it be sweet grass, beads, skins, all of that has been, it's like a major ordeal to get it or a major expense.
It is.
And over and over again, that seemed to interfere with the amount of work that people were able to do.
Mm-hmm.
And also whether other family members could start doing it, whether they could afford to get the materials to begin.
Yeah. Well, we had last winter, must have been in December, we had a call from a guy who supplies craft materials at Six Nations, and he wanted to know what we did with our corn husks and could he please get them and buy them from us, which is no problem to us, and we have been talking with him about it in regards to this year's crop, because he wanted to supply it for the people who are making the corn husk moccasins and the corn husk mats and stuff. They can't get the husks, and would we supply them with the husk, and we have no problem with that. We were just waiting to find out exactly what kind of shape he wants them in and delivered and what, and we will be more than happy to make an arrangement with them on that. So So that's a possibility there.
We interviewed an older woman on Oneida who has essentially not made anything in 3 or 4 years because of the difficulty, again, of getting the corn husk. And because she's older, she used to go out into the neighboring fields and get them herself. She can't do that anymore. And the farmers in her area are cutting down all the stalks so that she has no access to them. And again, it's a supply issue. Seem to be, you know, I would imagine that, and she's the, and then there's, who's the Chris Jones too, too. There are two people on her reserve who still do corn husk work.
Oh, yeah.
And Eula Chris John, who does it, has her son who's able to get for her, so that makes it easier.
Right.
But Emily doesn't have someone. As a matter of fact, we said we would ask when we were here about what she would have to do, so maybe I'll just have her give you a call.
Yeah, I'll just ask her to write, and we'll put her on a list with other people who are asking for it.
That's wonderful.
Also, so continue with another question. I was going to ask you, a lot of places have meanings for corn. What's your meaning? There's meaning for it.
You mean a word, the word for corn?
Mm-hmm.
Or the meaning for corn?
That
is something that we're just bringing back into the people. If you look at the history of this community, it has been one of the first Christianized communities around, and the first who've ever came in contact with Christianity. And they came in contact through the Moravian missionaries. So the culture, in that sense of their cultural ties, have died a lot, and that's why the language have died so much, because of the effects of Christianity on these people. They migrated from the eastern states and into Canada around the 1812, and the ones who migrated them into Canada were the missionaries who brought them into Canada. They built a Fairfield missions out there. They burned during the revolution. They were rebuilt on this site, and actually the reserve just grew around those missions. When the missionaries moved out, they moved out, but the United Church Mission moved in. So a lot of the people, there was actually a dispute historically among the migrating Delawares, and some of them actually left the migration walk. For the simple reason is that they didn't want to believe in Christianity. They wanted to believe in their own religion and culture, which was the Big House one. A lot of them went south and into Oklahoma and Nebraska and all those areas, and these ones came up here. And so they don't have a lot of that knowledge back, and it's just starting to come back in.
The meaning of the corn, when you have it hanging on your door or in your kitchen, is when you said you're going to always have food in your house.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The other thing that one old man has just told me, which is very important, and I've heard it a long time ago, and I think it was from my grandfather, that he said one day there would be a famine. And the only thing that's going to save the people is the corn. That's why we get a lot of positive response from older people in other communities that we're keeping the corn, and we're trying to develop the seeds.
There was 9 given out to this one girl. I don't know where she got it from, but she had told me some old woman had given her corn, and she said that she was going to be the keeper of the corn, and that she was the one that would give out the corn to certain people, that it would hold. Somewhere down the line, they might need that corn again. So I got 3 out of those 10.
Well, I went back to the Southwest this year, this past fall. And when I was up on the mesas, I was talking to this one old woman, and she gave me corn. And it was a different corn from ours.
Yeah.
But she told me, marry our corn, and we'll produce. So I brought the corn home, and I planted some. And I assume she wanted it to see if it would breed. And that's what I'm going to see if it happens this year.
I haven't planted mine yet.
No?
I want to try it maybe next year. This year I was going to wait because I was going to other people. but I would like to try to find it.
Yeah.
But the meaning of the corn from the other people that I talked to was mm-hmm. that they will always be food in the house, that there will never be, like, you can get right down and then people will say, well, we're going to be starving for this food.
Yeah.
But you never.
No. Yeah, because if you talk to a lot of the old people, during Depression, that's the only thing that kept them alive a lot of time was the corn, because they couldn't afford anything else.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that the United Nations is also saying as they look at the plant growing habits
mm-hmm.
in Western countries
mm-hmm.
is that we've developed so many hybrids
yeah.
that we've limited the stock in our corn, that if a blight were hit, for example, I guess there's only about 6 varieties of corn, of hybrid corn grown in North America. And if a blight comes through, it will essentially wipe out most of the corn crops. And what they're doing now is going, and also often not with very good ethics, but are going to the native peoples of South America,
yeah.
Africa, and North America to get the original corn to strengthen the crops.
Mm-hmm.
And they say if these original crops die out, then it will affect the as you say,
mm-hmm.
the patients of famine are very accurate.
Mm-hmm.
It would affect all peoples.
Mm-hmm.
And they've had to go for one strain that's resistant to a certain kind of bug it's Colombia? I can't remember. One of the ones in northern South America.
Yeah.
But the reason for that is because they're spraying every kind of chemical
yeah.
going in it.
Well,
mm-hmm.
it's that, but they've also inbred it. So
yeah,
just like
spread it too high.
So there's only 6 varieties instead of the numerous varieties there were originally,
mm-hmm.
which would keep the strength of the crops
mm-hmm.
going. Are there other projects that you're involved in that have to do with preservation of traditional values, traditional skills, or reviving them?
We're in the process right now. We have a special request into the Minister of Secretary of State for a language project. What I mentioned a while back was we have probably 10 to 12 people who have the language right now the way it should be. Most of them are living on this reserve. The rest are spread out in Oklahoma and wherever else. But what's happening is that the youngest people who can speak our language right now in this community are in their late 40s, early 50s. And one is the chief, and one is the one lady we have on staff right now, the language coordinator. The amount of work that she's doing right now is incredible in terms of she does research, she does dictionary development, she does instruction, and she does curriculum development. And she just doesn't have enough time to do all of that. And you can't go out and say, well, we'll hire somebody to come in, because there's no one out there who can do it with her. So the special request we have into the minister right now is to develop a 1-year intensive language training program where 5 people in this community will go on to a very strong immersion program, eventual immersion program, and they will spend 1 total year in a language, in a lot of different facets of the language. In 1 year's time, we will have developed 5 more people. It's a small amount considering the number of people, but those 5 people can spread out in terms of developing within the young. Because it's incredible, right now we have our instructor, she works in instruction, I'd say about 2 hours a day with the kids from 2 year, 2.5 to 5.5 years of age. Within that period of time, when she sees that 2.5 till that person gets 5.5, he's developed a lot on the language. But then they leave here and they're gone to Bridgetown and they've lost everything in 1 year. What we're going to try to do with those 5 teachers, those new teachers, is help them to keep those kids learning that language. But right now, until we get those 5 people, there's not a lot we can do, except keep preserving and keep developing the materials. It is. It is.
Do you have much contact with the Delaware peoples in Oklahoma and Nebraska, just so that they can be sharing there?
It's just started actually within the past few years. There has been some contact with them. And actually this community, I think in 5 years, will be having a large Delaware reunion, because they've been here for 200 years in this particular community. But there's been a lot of sharing within the Oklahoma Delawares, as much as possible with the Munsees, but mostly with the Oklahoma Delawares lately. I'd say within the past 3 or 4 years.
If you look towards what you would like to see done in the future, your vision,
mm-hmm.
what you think your community needs in terms of preservation of culture, what do you see as the most important things to focus on? And are there specific projects that you have in your mind?
That's a good question.
I like dreamers.
No, to be no, I don't. I guess I just have a very total vision of the community becoming a self-sufficient, self-governing base where they have some pride in who and what they are, and are offering something that they have of value to the people as a whole. And I think they're on the way of doing that, and that's good. That's a very vague and large dream. And there's a lot of things that I can do to make that dream happen, but that's not the way I work. I'm very conscious of the fact of what I do in the sense that if I'm trying to promote community development, then I don't sit here and start writing stuff and say, well, this will do it. A lot of the stuff that I do is based on constant feedback from what people feel are the needs, and try to develop something that's going to meet that need. I'm just in the process of completing a parent-child support program, but that developed from some people telling me that there was a need for that, and that's what they want to see. The community center is another one. That's a need that they want. It's not something that I want that's going to make them reach that goal. It's something that they're going to want that's going to help them move closer to where they're going. And that's the only role I play, is helping them to move by, I guess I'm an instrument to make them move, and that's all. I don't like to be foreseen as the one sitting here and saying, well, we'll do all this and we'll plan all this and it's going to make it work, and I guarantee you, because that's not development. That's not community development, where the community has the belief and the feeling. And we have been trying to push this for a long period of time, and we had a lot of workshops with this community, telling the community, and it's taken a long time, and it was a real big gamble for the council. And I'm surprised the council never threw me out when I say, let's have some workshops, and let's have the people say what they don't like about this administration, what they don't like about the staff, what they don't like about the council. I mean, let's do something about it. And we did have a series of workshops, and we discussed it. And people came out, and they said, well, I don't like this, and I don't like that, and I don't like this. And that was good. Because at the end of the workshop, the final task they were to do was say, okay, what would you do to make it better? And people sat there and said, you know. And the whole basis of that workshop was to say, it's all right to complain. We're not saying don't complain. We're saying, but help us come up with some answers. Help us come up with some things that are going to make it work, because it's your community, not ours, not just mine, not just the chiefs, not just anybody. It's everybody's, and if they don't do it together, it's not going to work.